anyone who is a casual user, I think, of ChatGPT can sometimes struggle with that. And I think it requires a mindset shift, because we think of something like ChatGPT as a shortcut or a time saver. And it can be. It definitely is. But you first have to put the work in and almost like, you know, train it, right? So ChatGPT is a large language model. GPT-4 is trained on 1.8 trillion parameters. So you can't just, if you think you can just go in there and snap your fingers and instantly get something exactly how you want it, that's not really how it works.
Hey, everybody. This week's guest on the podcast is Jordan Wilson. He's the founder and CEO of Accelerant Agency, a boutique digital strategy company based in Chicago that scales startups and small businesses. Most recently, Jordan created and launched Everyday AI, a media company dedicated to helping everyday people understand and use generative AI through daily live stream podcasts and a free daily newsletter. Everyday AI has quickly become one of the fastest growing podcasts in the tech category, currently ranking in the top 150 podcasts out of 89,000 in that category. I think he's got to check, but I think he's above me. Anyway, before starting Accelerant and Everyday AI, Jordan served as an executive director of Triple Threat Mentoring, a youth mentoring nonprofit that impacted 5,000 at-risk youth every year. During his nearly 10 years with Triple Threat, Jordan mainly focused on partnerships and activations with Nike and Jordan Brand. Before landing at Triple Threat, Jordan worked his 7 years as a multimedia journalist, most recently at Chicago Sun-Times, and collected honors such as a Pulitzer Fellowship and ACP Story of the Year. Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I am got a real-life person on the other side of the microphone, although he deals in artificial intelligence all the time. Jordan, how are you doing today?
Doug, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. It's funny you say a real live person, because someone actually on YouTube told me I was an AI. Just because I talk about AI doesn't, you know, I'm actually still a real person, y'all. Like, I got feelings.
Yeah, you know, that's sort of interesting. It's hard to tell. I mean, you look at pictures and stuff. There was a picture that came up. They were talking about, if you remember that MF's not real, the woman on the plane, you know, they showed videos of her, and then she came out later with sort of a studio picture in her kitchen. That's not the same woman. They start trying to do all this other stuff. And it's like, dude, look at her hands. That's one of the big things. If her fingers and stuff are normal, it's probably not an AI thing, because, you know, there's something that has trouble with.
Always look at the fingers. That's the giveaway.
Right? Anything weird like that, because you come up, they look like they've been in a train wreck. So, explain what you live in AI. So we were talking earlier, you know, I worked at Microsoft in the early days, and it was very more narrow, you know, than that. And now it's just every day you open up and there's new AI, something else. How do you stay on top of all of this?
Yeah, it's wild. It's everywhere you go. But funny enough, the way I stay on top of AI is with AI. So I've actually trained an AI chat to tell me what's important and to recap everything that's going on. So I actually start my day, like I grab my coffee, you know, I go live and talk AI every day at 7:30. So at about 6:30, you know, ChatGPT in my trained chat is literally going through all these links and telling me what's happening. So that's the only way to do it, because it's like, I'll read essentially short little recaps of dozens or hundreds of stories every day.
I get your newsletter. Really love it. I mean, it does help sort of me digest some of that as well, because at least you're curating it a little bit, that I don't have to get every little nuance that comes out, because I'm sure there's like 80% of stuff we never see.
Oh, yeah. So much. Yeah. It's being curated by AI, but then multiple humans are looking at it as well. So don't worry.
So what's going to prevent the AI? You know, let's go to Skynet. What's going to start filtering things and not showing you the evil stuff that's going on? How does that work?
Oh, yeah, because that's what everyone's always talking about, right? It's the rise of the Terminator. When's Terminator coming? I try so hard not to dive down that rabbit hole, because in theory, all the pieces that one company or one evil genius might need to create a Terminator is kind of all there, right?
Yeah.
So I try not to think about that. And instead, I try to think of more generative AI and yeah. how, you know, people can use it on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, yeah, like we get into Skynet and Terminator. I don't know. That's a rabbit hole and a half right there,
Doug. Yeah, I look at it from more of a capitalistic standpoint. If you kill all your audience, then there's no money in it.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, it's like, think like Boston Dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. If people haven't seen that, it's like, you know, those robots that can now flip and do karate and dance. And then think of these large language models and everything else, combine it all. It's like, yeah, I think are those all the pieces that are there for the uprising?
Yeah, but they're creepy looking. I just can't get past that dog thing. That really bothers me. But there's no head or something on there. But so help us. You help people. So what do you do, you know, when you're not sharing the newsletter and stuff? Because you're trying to really help people understand what this is. Because the way I look at it is, if you're not using AI to help you in what you're going to do, you're falling backwards every day to go do that. Because other people are. And really at Microsoft, the thing that we look is it should help humans. It should help us be better and take some of those tasks off that are very time consuming or you know, these other things. And it should help us, not something replace us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're doing it every day because I think it's important. And here's why. So even right, like Doug, your background at Microsoft, I think that there's Microsoft's going to be shortly unveiling something that I think is going to change the way that people fundamentally work with Copilot, right? Yeah. So if people aren't as dorky as you and I, Doug, so you know, Copilot is essentially, think of like the powers of ChatGPT, but that's everywhere. And it's built into your operating system on Windows, right? Extremely powerful. But I think once, you know, I think there'll be two phases. You know, obviously Microsoft will release it. And there's going to be this huge learning curve and this huge attention curve, kind of like what happened with ChatGPT, you know, from November 2022 until like January 2023. Where there's it's on the news every night. Yeah. So I think we're going to see something like that, but much, much larger once Microsoft Copilot comes out. And I really want kind of our audience, you know, at Everyday AI, that's the, you know, the company that we cover AI every day. I want our audience to be prepared for when that happens. And I want them to know how to, you know, talk to a large language model. And I want them to know, oh, you know, Microsoft Designer, I know how to, you know, work with text to create AI images and presentations and all these things. So yeah, I do think that, you know, in the coming weeks or months, like if you think AI has already infiltrated your workflow or your career or your company or your vertical, just wait until that happens.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll avoid one of those Tay moments that I think they've gotten much better since that outcome. But so in this working with ChatGPT, so I've used it quite a lot here lately, and I've unfortunately I didn't come up on your newsletter as early as I would have liked to have it. I've been further along, but in generating these responses and all, so it is very very powerful and very quick. And I use it sort of as a first draft writer for things that I'm doing. But then I always spend the next, I get put in time out on occasion because I really haven't sort of done the initial training and prompting of it. Oh, you asked too many questions. You're going to have to go get a job, I think is what they said.
you get put on time out for a couple hours.
I get put on time out to go do that. So how do you go ahead and help people get better at that? Right. Because that's where the magic is all the prompts and knowing now they're asked the right thing. And sometimes it's more importantly, give it a negative prompt. Well, don't do this.
Sure.
When it comes. So how do you work with people to do that? What's the magic chicken for figuring that out?
Yeah, I'll answer this maybe in a way that doesn't sound conventional. The best way to learn how to prompt is not through prompts, because there's so much bad information out there that says, oh, you know, copy and paste this prompt.
Yeah.
So that's like, if you're learning how to use the internet, right? Mm-hmm. Think of when the internet first came out. And if someone were to send you a spreadsheet of their 10,000 favorite websites and they said, this is how you use the internet. It's not how you use the internet. Like, you have to learn how. You have to learn how to search for something in, you know, Ask Jeeves or whatever was around, you know, back then. And you have to learn how to navigate a website and click and save things, right? So it's the same thing with prompts. You don't learn how to use ChatGPT by looking at other people's prompts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a large language model. And, you know, kind of what we teach, we do a free course where, you know, we teach people this. We don't charge them anything. There's no upsell at the end. It's free. But you go through and you learn how to actually use a large language model. And you like, the best way to prompt is to treat that individual chat like a new employee. You have to go back and forth. You have to almost go through a small bout of like reinforcement learning, knowledge sharing, and access to make sure that that chat has access to everything that it needs to do the job that you're telling it to do.
Yeah. Haven't they introduced some things where you can sort of give you a little background and stuff? I know GPT-4, I was looking at it the other day, came up, said, tell me a little bit about yourself, and they'll try to incorporate that in your future chats.
Yeah. So that's called custom instructions. Mm-hmm. And hot take, I think it's useless for most people. And here's why.
Okay.
You know, my one kind of beef that I have with ChatGPT is the user interface and the user experience is not the best. It's the most powerful AI tool by far, if you know how to use it, specifically with plugins. But with custom instructions, yeah, you can kind of like pre-prompt, so then you don't always have to keep telling it, oh, you know, here's background, I want you to do this and that. But for most people, if you're using ChatGPT like correctly, the way we teach them, you can use it for all aspects of your day. So many times you don't want those kind of preset custom instructions in there because it's like, oh no, I don't want you to know all this information or to act like this role, because that's not what this specific chat is for.
Yeah.
And there's no easy way to toggle it on and off. So I don't like custom instructions. I think it's a marketing thing at best right now until they improve the UI UX.
I like that aspect if you only use it for one thing, because you're right. Because, you know, part of the prompts I have, if I'm writing for some things, I want humor. I want a lot of humor in it. But if I'm trying to be a little bit more business or professional, then, you know, I want to sort of lighten up on that. So yeah, it does help some of the I meant humorous in the other thing, but no, you're wrong. I kind of like that. But are there some of just a few things that you could sort of do? Because there are things like how long of an answer you want or these other things. I mean, there's some things like that that might be a little helpful.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And you know, even when I say like, oh, don't do the traditional copy and paste prompt in the end. So like we teach people to prime it first, which is, you know, going through doing a Q&A, giving it answers to ChatGPT's questions, because it'll ask you questions. And then after all that, then yes, you do have a traditional prompt at that point. But at that point, it is significantly better. But yes, like what you said, Doug, it will include very specific instructions, you know, such as the output, you know, probably examples of good outputs and bad outputs. But yes, at that point, you will be asking for very specific things.
Well, your background didn't, I mean, you sort of fell into AI because it seemed sort of cool. From your background, it looked like that's not where your degree. Of course, they didn't have AI degrees four years ago, they didn't really have that. So how did you sort of fall into this?
Yeah. It's a great question. Like, my wife always says I was born like 15 years too late. I've been a dork my whole life, and I've been obsessed with technology my whole life. So, you know, I started out as a journalist. So, you know, when I did see ChatGPT, I was instantly, or even before that, when I saw just the GPT technology, you know, which came out in late 2020, I was instantly drawn to it. And, you know, I have a digital strategy business, you know, small business here in Chicago. So we were using it, you know, for ideation for our clients, to brainstorm, to improve copy. So that's kind of, it was a natural, partnership for me and our company, Accelerant Agency, to use this GPT technology, because with a background in writing and storytelling and technology, it was almost like I couldn't have avoided it if I tried.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to the journalist piece of that, because that's really what I want to tie in. I mean, back in the day, you know, the journalists were like some of the first story. If you go back even the tablet days, whoever was doing this work is the storyteller. You sort of learned the foundational piece of it. You need to keep them. The hook always is in the first part of it. Are they going to read any further and stuff? How did that, you know, tell me a little bit about what makes a good journalist. We'll go back and then we'll sort of say, how does that come in what you're doing today?
Yeah. Curiosity. in all honesty. I think curiosity is first and foremost what makes a good journalist, because you should never, as a journalist, just repeat what's a source or, you know, someone you're interviewing tells you. That doesn't make you a journalist. That makes you a mouthpiece or, you know, working PR for that person. So that's,
we have a lot of that today.
No, anymore. It's like, how long is this show, Doug? Yeah. Don't get me started. No, 100%. So I think curiosity is number one. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, this sounds like a cap out, but the other one is just storytelling. Mm-hmm. And like, what I mean by that, even as a teenager, when I started, I started as a full-time sports journalist when I was in high school, but my goal, I would go out and cover, you know, a girls volleyball game or something, you know, not terribly exciting. And I actually had a mom come up to me after a game once. And she said, I still remember this. I don't know why, maybe because it's still something I draw on today. She said, "Jordan, I love reading your stories because I'm at all of these games watching my daughter play. And I know when I read your story, I'm going to learn something completely new. I'm going to see a completely different side that I don't see from even watching the game or talking to my daughter after the game." So I think that's also what makes a great journalist is you have to be able to tell the story that is not as obvious and really kind of dig a little deeper to where, hey, even if someone watched it, you still have to be able to captivate their attention and tell a good story to even if they witnessed it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm sure the mom was looking through the lens of her daughter playing, and that was sort of a myopic view of that. So you've got a very narrow. You're taking a larger view and then sort of zeroing in places that maybe not be so obvious, right? So that's an interesting approach to take. And I think the who, what, why, where, and where, that's the curiosity piece that used to come in. And, but the sports background is very interesting from that standpoint, because I did color commentary for football back at high school football. It was back in my radio days. And it was always sort of, I tried to interview the coach and do this little background, right? All colors will just simply fill in between the whistles, for lack of it, but bring a little texture because it was all audio. There was no visual to watch with that if you weren't there. So I really sort of looked back in the radio days of how people did things. You know, described Orson Welles. I mean, that was a great thing of what they were talking about, the space invading. I mean, that was all just auditory, right? You drew your own pictures. And I think a good journalist does that, allows you sort of form your own pictures, not necessarily your perspective.
Yeah. And even if you think of more modern days, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone has social media, right? So everyone is already talking about the kind of the topical, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think a great storyteller or a great journalist, they have to kind of, like what you said, like it's almost like with color commentary, like you have to be able to tell a story that people can actually visualize with the details that even if they, if they're reading about it on social media, if they're talking about it, you have to be able to find a captivating hook and to tell them something that no one else would know unless that person, as a journalist, would express that deep curiosity. Yeah. Because if you have that deep curiosity to begin with, you will be able to tell that captivating story that no one else knows.
Yeah, it's it's sort of, if you're looking for a story, there's stories there, but you have to look deeper and broader than, again, the mother looking at the daughter. So, I mean, that was a great compliment from that standpoint. I can't think of anything better than that. I'm learning something new. And I was at the game watching. When did this happen? Which happens a lot. I have grandkids and I watch them and I'm like, when I watched Shaquille, I went to, when Shaquille was back at LSU, I went to a basketball game and this is, I missed sort of the broader story. I'm looking at, okay, fine. He's bigger. He's faster. I look back in the line score, he scored 35 points. I said, when the hell did this happen? I watched him all the time. It just didn't look like, you know, cause he was playing a different game than everybody else. That's what I saw. Mm-hmm. I saw him playing one game. Everybody else, it was like a college player playing a junior high team. It looked like,
you're right.
I missed the forest for the trees in that one. It was like, there was a lot of skill there.
Growing up as a Bulls fan, it was the same thing with watching Michael Jordan. Yeah. You know, you'd see him look at the box score the next day. I'd always read the newspaper and I'd be like, wait, what? Like he had a triple double, but greatness. It can look effortless.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the real great players can do that. And in your using, I'll give you the honor of being Michael Jordan of ChatGPT here, if you will. But I mean, the stuff that I've learned just from the newsletters I've had, you do make it in you do highlight, here's something you may want to think about, right? And you sort of give a nice teaser and stuff to it. So I want to compliment you on that. And then, but how do you then use, again, because there's different facets, but we'll stick to the storytelling. What's the best way to use ChatGPT to sort of help you tell a story? Say you've got a blog post coming up, or you've got, you're doing a little research for a podcast that you want to come on. What's the best way to use that? Again, your mileage may vary because it's dependent on your audience, point of view, different thing like that. That's a given. But it just generally, what's the best way to use it?
Yeah, it's a great question, Doug, because I think that's anyone who is a casual user, I think, of ChatGPT can sometimes struggle with that. Mm-hmm. And I think it requires a mindset shift, because we think of something like ChatGPT as a shortcut, mm-hmm, or a time saver. And it can be. Mm-hmm. Oh, it definitely is. But you first have to put the work in and almost like, you know, train it, right? So, mm-hmm, so ChatGPT is a large language model. GPT-4 is trained on 1.8 trillion parameters. So you can't just, if you think you can just go in there and snap your fingers and instantly get something exactly how you want it, that's not really how it works. You have to almost train it for your own purposes. So, mm-hmm, that's what I always recommend to people, is you have to go in there and work it. You have to prime it. Yep. You have to give examples of what's good and bad. You have to go back and forth. But then at that point, then I think you can use ChatGPT to tell a very amazing and captivating story, or to help you learn, yeah, something. You know, I've gotten it to where it can literally, you know, I have a background as a journalist. I'd like to say I'm an okay writer. It can write just about as good as I can, mm-hmm, but 20 times faster, right? I don't, yeah, use it. You know, I always tell people this, I like, because I still enjoy the process of writing, mm-hmm, even though ChatGPT can do it at like, you know, 15x, 20x as fast at like a 95 to 99% quality of someone that's getting paid to, you know, I've been getting paid to write for 20 years.
Yeah.
I still enjoy writing, and yeah, I don't want to lose that, even though, you know, I essentially don't want to become a machine. I, yeah, still want to be able to exercise, yeah, you know, those things that I enjoy.
You know, it helps me because I have the challenge of, I try to write and edit at the same time, which gets me nowhere, because I get like 30 minutes, I've still got two words on the sentence because they're still not perfect. For me, it again, using it for a first draft, say, here's something, you know, let's talk about that. What do you do about the gap that it's only trained up to 2021 data? What if you're trying to find something current? How do you sort of, yeah, help bridge that gap?
Yeah, these AI chats lie. They lie all the time, right? They make stuff up.
Well, I heard about the court case where the lawyer used that and made up some cases that didn't exist. But
yeah, that didn't. Yeah, never use it to write about a current court case, knowing that the cutoff is now almost 2 full years old, you know, yeah, September 2021. The simplest way, so kind of when I talked about priming ChatGPT, mm-hmm, one of the things I talked about is resource sharing and knowledge, mm-hmm, sharing. So that's why I only use exclusively, I only use the plugins mode, mm-hmm, inside GPT-4, because then you can give it access to something that happened 10 seconds ago, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as you publish something, or as soon as something is published on the web, if you give ChatGPT through plugins access, mm-hmm, to that, it can know everything. And the knowledge cutoff of September 2021 doesn't be a problem. And then hallucinations and lying and inaccurate made up information is no longer an issue. So, yeah, you really just have to, again, it's like, I always say, shift mm-hmm, your mindset. You're not working with Google where you put one input in, one output.
Yeah.
You're working with a large language model. And then you have to think of mode next. Mm-hmm. You always have to use the right mode, you know? So again, to get around what you said, Doug, there, it's, mm-hmm, go in plugins and make sure it has access to, you know, a recent PDF or, mm-hmm, websites, or the ability to query the internet on its own. So yeah, you can definitely get around it and, mm-hmm, stop ChatGPT from lying so much.
I just call it, We call it more like a politician. I'll just make crap up. Fill in the gap. This makes sense.
Yeah. Call it politician mode. You know,
politician mode.
When you keep it in 2021. Yeah. Just make stuff up and it hopes no one notices.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's it. So how do people get a hold of you? You've helped me already. I'm going to go do some plugin searches and we can sort of talk about that later, I guess, with the best ones. But how do they get a hold of you? And you know, what's the one tip? So if you had one tip to go away, what's that going to be?
Yeah, love that. So I'll start with the tip and then I'll say how to get a hold of me. So the tip would be, if you want to leverage AI, right? Because it can be hard. Like we talked about at the top of the show, it's like, how do you keep up? All these things are happening so much, you know, all these bells and whistles every day. So focus on where you spend your most time doing manual, repetitive tasks. Mm-hmm. So as an example, maybe it's data entry. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, reading long PDFs and taking notes, like whatever it is in your day-to-day job, career, business building, whatever, find out where you're spending the most manual time and then find an AI powered solution. Don't do it the other way. Don't just say, oh, I saw this list of 32 tools. I'm going to try them all and see what works. No. See where you're spending the most manual time, then find the correct tool that will help you do that job. Yeah. So that's kind of my one takeaway. And then how people can get a hold of me. The easiest way is just to go to the youreverydayai.com. Mm-hmm. That's the way. So, go to youreverydayai.com. Connect. You know, we have a free daily newsletter. Other people actually charge and you have to pay to be on their mm-hmm. newsletter list. Ours, I think, is really good. And then also, we do a live stream every day where, it's like, oh, Doug Thompson's on. I can ask him questions, live and get answers live. So that's another thing is we bring smart people on our live stream podcast every single day and people can ask questions live and get and learn together. So that's another piece. Like, yes, that's how you can get a hold of me, but that's also a great takeaway as well is learn with other people and get your questions answered.
No, I like that. And I have a limitation. If I can't remember what happened 3 days ago, so my limitation is current. Well, just don't trust on me to remember things back in the 80s. But thanks a lot, Jordan, for all your time. Reach out to Jordan. Subscribe to the, I'll spit the word out in a minute. Subscribe to the newsletter. It is worth your time. It's a quick read. Great, great resources and stuff on there. Jordan, thanks a lot for sharing your wisdom, your journalism background, and more importantly, your newsletter.
Yeah, absolutely, Doug. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Cool. Hey, hope you enjoyed that episode with Jordan. As a fellow AI nerd, it was really interesting to me. And now he saved me a few tips that I can make ChatGPT work for me. Anyway, if you liked the episode, comment below. Let us know. And please go to your favorite podcast app and give it a 5-star rating. Just really helps the visibility of the podcast. Maybe I'll get up to, 160 right behind Jordan anyway. Please do that. Please share it with a friend. But most importantly, thanks for watching and listening to the Doug Thompson Podcast.